Did you know that on average, every one of us in this country consumes 13 kilos of bananas a year? The Australian banana industry is worth $327 million and around 4,500 people work in the industry making sure we get those bananas. Up until now, strict quarantine restrictions have protected the industry from the threat of serious diseases that come in with other banana crops from other countries. It's an industry that's worked very hard to maintain this disease-free status. However, this week, Biosecurity Australia moved to allow the importation of bananas from the Philippines. And with me are two people passionate about stopping this happening, third-generation grower Andrew Forrest. Hello, Andrew.
Hello there, Michael.
Good to have you with us. Andrew, you don't happen to own Fortescue Metals as well, do you?
No, actually, it's Andrew Everest.
Everest?
Yes.
Oh, my apologies. Okay. Thank you for that, Andrew. And also with us is Len Collins, who's the Australian Bananas Growers Council Committee Chairman. Hello, Len.
Good morning.
Len, I might start with you, if I may. Tell us about this decision from Biosecurity Australia, because this isn't the first time it's been mooted, has it?
No. Biosecurity has been investigating this application since June 2000. They've put out three drafts and an addendum to it, a draft, and now they've put out a final report. And in that report, they recommend bananas can come into Australia from the Philippines or Mindanao Island specifically, as long as specific measures are adhered to. Now, they have put up measures that we believe are experimental, they're unworkable, and they're unenforceable.
Well, you've actually gone through and picked apart some of the previous drafts on this recommendation from Biosecurity Australia, and they've had to go back and have a look at that, haven't they?
Yes, I think picked apart might be the wrong word. I believe that we've put forward credible science about where they've been wrong.
Yeah.
Sometimes they've been wrong in their mathematics.
Have they acknowledged that to you?
They have acknowledged some of the mistakes they have made once they had to put out an addendum to a report because they had a mistake that made a great material difference to how things would have come out. We believe in the final there are mistakes in it as well. But it's the measures where we believe that there is a flaw because the area of low pest prevalence, we believe that's an experimental measure. We believe, so. I mean, they say 2.5 clusters out of a million can have MOCO symptoms. Now, how are you going to test 2.5 million, 2.5 clusters out of a million? It's an unenforceable and unworkable measure.
Now, Len, before we get into some of the good guts about the disease status, I guess, of our bananas and what's been under threat before, why? Let me just ask you a question now as a consumer and devil's advocate on this.
Yep.
Why isn't this simply our local banana growers trying to protect their industry from further competition as opposed to crying foul over biosecurity?
No, this is about banana growers worried about getting these diseases. Now, if we get MOCO or black sigatoga, at Black Sigatoga, we got that. It would push up our production costs dramatically. We estimate that at least $2 a carton would push up our production cost. That's if we could control it. I mean, 90% of the bananas now are grown in North Queensland in the Tully-Innisfail region, which is very close to the Barrier Reef.
Yes.
And we would need to spray up to 50 times a year. Now, I don't know whether the Environmental Department would even allow that now. So Black Sigatoga, if we got it through the industry, I believe it could have the potential to wipe out our industry.
What does Black Sigatoga look like?
Black Sigatoga is a leaf disease of the plant. It's a fungus, and it kills the leaf on the plant. And if you don't have seven or eight good leaves on a plant, disease-free, you will not ripen your. You will not fill out your bunches or and get them to market.
And in fact, some local growers had to contend with an outbreak of Black Sigatoga back in 2001, didn't they?
Yes, in 2000. And I'm not sure in the right year. Anyway, 2001. I think it might have been 2002. There was an outbreak in the growing area in Tully. We were very lucky; it was picked up early. I had it on my own farm as well. It was picked up early before it had spread right throughout the area. We had an exceptionally dry year that year, and that helped us to eradicate it. and we, with the full cooperation of the farmers, we were very lucky in the area we had it in, because there were mainly not a lot of farmers involved. There were a few big farmers, and they were able to eradicate it.
And Len, do you know where that came from? Where did that outbreak come from?
It has never been found where it came from. It's a mystery.
Mm. Okay. Andrew, you've had to contend yourself with disease outbreaks on your own property, haven't you?
Well, we've had bungee top virus for years. And
what's bungee top virus?
It's an aphid spread disease.
Right.
And you can control it, but it's it can be devastating.
And what else have you had?
Excuse me. The Panama disease, which gets into our ladyfinger plantations, and it's very hard to control. In fact, we can't control that.
And how does that exhibit itself?
The bunches, you have a beautiful stool there 1 minute, and then it just collapses. The leaves go all yellow. It's a type of a wilt that gets into the plant.
Is it right? Am I right in thinking that it seems to me that bananas are very prone to disease?
Well, they are, yes. They get a lot of leaf diseases and things like that, but we're pretty lucky here in Australia. We've just got those two we can manage.
Mm.
And I wouldn't like to be trying to contend with any of these other ones, that are these exotic ones, at all.
So even though Biosecurity Australia, in putting forward its recommendation that importation of Filipino bananas be allowed, is saying that that, of course, is subject to intensive screening from the home country, that doesn't reassure you?
Not at all. That's we know what goes on over there in them places, and there's no strict guidelines. They say that for a little while, and then things get relaxed, and once it's in, that's it. It'll put a lot of people out of business and turn towns like Tully and Innisfail into ghost towns.
Well, Andrew, let's move away from, I guess, some of the politics and also the quarantine aspects of bananas and talk about the varieties that are available to us now here on Food on Friday. What are you growing? You've got ladyfingers, you mentioned.
Ladyfingers and Cavendish.
Are they the only two varieties we grow in this country?
No, there's a few others. They're not big markets for them. They've got the red dackers and the Dacasts and Senoritas and various other varieties, but they're not big.
They sound exotic and kind of interesting. Why is it we don't seem to want to eat these other varieties?
It's just about educating the public. I mean, a lot of the Asian people like the red dackers.
Right.
But years ago, ladyfingers, 20 years ago, ladyfingers in the southern markets, you know, there was a few there, but people didn't really eat them much. And now...
I love them.
They're everywhere now.
Yeah, they are.
And people like them, especially the older people, because they don't go brown in fruit salad, and their shelf life's very good.
Is there? I didn't know that. Why don't they go brown in fruit salad?
I don't know. They just don't.
Len, do you know why?
No, but they don't. I know that.
Because, I mean, the old days, to try and stop fruit from browning, you used to cover them in lemon juice, and it sounds like ladyfingers is the way to go. Len, you agree? Do you grow them yourself?
No, I'm a Cavendish grower, and I mean...
Are they the regular ones we still see a lot of, the larger banana?
Yes. Cavendish is the main traded banana in the world.
Right.
But the Philippines, they're the third biggest exporter in the world, but only one-third of their production is for export, and that's all Cavendish, where their local population won't eat the Cavendish, they only eat all their other varieties.
That's intriguing, isn't it?
Yes, but it's the palate of the Europeans that only like the Cavendish. They don't seem to like some of the other varieties, but the Asian people seem to like a different banana.
Well, I think it's about time we've widened our palate, quite frankly. Len, when it comes to the reason why we eat bananas, it's often seen as a dessert fruit. It's a dessert food, really.
Yes.
And yet there are some banana varieties, are there not, that actually cater to a more savoury taste?
There's cooking bananas right around the world that are eaten in as a staple diet instead of potatoes around the world. They're not in Australia very much either.
Same kind of starch input content?
Starch input, yeah.
Yeah, and bananas...
And they chip them.
They chip them as well?
They chip them overseas in some countries. I've had them in Costa Rica and the chips, and they're very nice.
Oh, yum. Do you fry them? How do you deal with them?
Yeah, they were cooked for us, and they were fried just like a potato flake chip.
You see, that does it for me. I'm already thinking about that in a very big way for lunch now. Len, when it comes to what we do with our bananas, aside from eating them fresh, we also dry and chip them, do we not, in this country?
There is some drying and chipping in Australia. There are a couple of firms, I think one in Coffs Harbour and one in Tully at least, that do it, and they make it for cake mixes and all those type of things too.
Andrew, yourself, if you're making... In fact, I want to ask you about this, Andrew, because you mentioned Ladyfingers and Cavendish as being the two main varieties available in supermarkets, and yet we also see the red-tipped banana bunches. We also see another separate subclass called organic. What are all the differences between red-tip, organic, and, you know, the other varieties?
The red-tip ones are grown in a... I think... I'm not real sure on them, but I think they're growing in a... like under a sub-organic type banner.
Len, do you know that?
Yes, they're grown with low pesticides.
So
it's not organic, but it's a low pesticide.
Oh, that's interesting. So that red waxy tip says, you know, less chemicals used, but it's not completely organic.
Yes, that's right.
That's interesting. So they've done that for the red tips, and yet the organic ones that I've been seeing and sometimes purchasing... they just say organic. There's no other distinguishing marketing. Maybe they need to brand themselves in a similar fashion, do you think?
Yeah, organic need to probably brand themselves better.
Yeah.
I mean, I think now we're getting proper organic standards, which we haven't had in Australia beforehand. I think the legislation passed recently, or just about to be passed. I'm not sure actually where it is.
Is it like all other parts of the organic food industry? It's a growing part of your market?
It is a growing part of the market, but, I mean, there is a lot of problems trying to grow bananas organically with leaf diseases. But there are some people doing it, and some in the drier areas, and some people who have been quite successful at it.
Andrew, just back to you. I understand there's a little bit of tension between the growers in far north Queensland and those in northern New South Wales.
Why? Oh, just a bit of friendly rivalry. Nothing too much.
Nothing?
No, that's all right.
What's the rivalry based on?
Oh, it's just, you know, we reckon they glut the market. They oversupply the place a bit, and I think they see us as a bit of a thorn in their side down here at times. But we need each other. We need each other to, if there's another blow up there, I mean, they've got to have other growing areas in the place, otherwise there will be good arguments for imports.
Well, look at Innisfail, for example, you know, and what happened up there.
So, for sure.
I take it you filled that gap in the market when that happened.
Well, we're only a fraction of it, but there's places like Bundaberg, and by the time you come down through them areas, down to the Tweed, you know, it adds up the acreage. They're here and there and everywhere, and, you know, and they support a lot of families. And the other part of this import business,
yeah,
if people knew what chemicals these bananas were treated with and how they got them here, they wouldn't even eat them. They wouldn't even eat them. If they really knew and they'd seen photos of what they do in them plantations, there'd be a consumer backlash like you wouldn't believe. It's just wrong, I reckon.
You're saying don't trust the recommendation from Biosecurity Australia. You don't believe they've got this right at all.
I wouldn't let my kids eat them bananas. They're coming out of the Philippines. I've seen what happens to what they do over there. That they're not. We've got such a good article in Australia. It's such good food and good soil, and you know, and our areas. We look at the energy it's going to take to get them bananas over here. I mean, we're just down the road. You know, with the food miles. You know, all this has got to come into consideration. If people are serious about, you know, the carbon emissions and all the rest of it, well, we've got to get fair income and support our local. You know, keep things here and.
Okay.
We've got a good industry.
Andrew, thank you very much indeed. Len Collins, thank you as well. I think both of you put your points very strongly and forcefully, and it's good to hear that the bananas are still a growing industry in this country because, of course, on average, we all eat 13 kilos. I'll put a recipe up for how you can use them in the campfire on the website. That's Andrew Everest, a banana grower in the Tweed Valley or Tweed Valley of New South Wales, and Len Collins from the Australian Banana Growers Council.
You've been listening to another ABC Radio National podcast. ABC Radio National, on air and online, with many of our programs available as podcasts or MP3 downloads. All the details at abc.net.au/rn/podcast.